The rapid acquisition policy the Army uses in Afghanistan may actually move too quickly. The department can customize how it uses the defense acquisition system to make sure warfighters get what they need, but the Army's information technology systems may need a slower approach. Christopher Pernin is director of the Force Development and Technology Program at the Rand Arroyo Center and senior physical scientist and professor at the Pardee Rand Graduate School. It's terrific to have you on the program this afternoon, Chris. Thanks for your time today. Explain right now how the Army's using the rapid acquisition provisions that it has for IT programs and the challenges that you and your colleagues are seeing when you look at it. Chris, thanks for being on today.
Thank you for having me. We've done a number of studies over the last several years on rapid acquisition, and if you look closely at them, they're very much tied to ongoing operations and trying to meet a lot of those warfighter needs that emerged. In a recent study that we did put out, we looked at some IT-related ones having to do with command and control systems, so these are really software systems, and they arose through a couple different mechanisms that had been at work in the past. And if you think about how the requirements were actually generated, how those things were sourced with new technologies, and then how they actually transitioned into the field, each one of them had their own particular story. So we were really looking at to identify issues and challenges associated with those systems and then identifying some of the factors that really enabled the successes in these cases.
If we were playing the secret word game in this interview, Chris, you would have hit it right up front, because the word I would have chosen is requirements. Everybody that I talk to about any issues anywhere in the defense acquisition programs, and to be fair, especially in IT, in the civilian agencies too, they go right to requirements. What did you see as you looked specifically at the requirements piece?
Well, for rapidly acquired capabilities, they were usually willing to take a lesser requirement. What I mean by that is that the Army and a lot of the other services have a very deliberate requirements process that tends to look out multiple years, maybe even decades, to what the force should be in the future to try to keep up with the changing environment. Now, when you put a force into an actual operational contingency, like they've been in two different theaters and around the world, you have to take certain solutions that perhaps don't meet that gold standard, and you start to maybe get away with an 80% solution, the proverbial 80%, where you see something on the shelf, perhaps, it's going to meet some of your needs, and you'd rather have that than wait around for a better thing later on.
You have several key findings here, five of them to be precise, and I'd like to have you take me through each of them in turn. The first one is high-level champions are critical to the success of rapid acquisitions, and that sounds pretty self-explanatory on the surface. Is it?
In some ways, it is. It's an interesting area here, because we're talking about rapid acquisition, but we're also talking about threat adaptations and trying to meet the ongoing needs of an ongoing operation. So, to actually pinpoint a need from a theater really does take somebody who's in that theater doing something. Now, this is not always the case, but in a couple cases we did look at, it was a general officer who stood up and said, "You know, I need this thing, and how can I get it?" Well, they went out and they, in some cases, found it, sourced it, knew where the technology was coming from, and said, "Listen, I'm willing to take this thing and bring it into the force and actually get it working right now." And that champion does actually facilitate moving these things into the field.
The next key finding is organizational and user flexibility enable rapid acquisition of new capabilities. And that flexibility, for example, is one we saw in an example of that's also has in common what you just mentioned, and that's the MRAP system in Iraq. And it strikes me that kind of flexibility can be more difficult in an IT environment than in a weapon system environment. Is that fair to say, do you believe, Chris?
Yeah, it's fair. There was a lot of complexity in the acquisition system, and if you read the regulations closely, though, there's also a lot of flexibility that's allowed. And this is a cultural change to try to exercise some of the flexibility that's already built into the acquisition system in general. But because we're talking about a lot of these rapidly acquired capabilities were over the last 12 years. They were coming from different funding sources, perhaps. They were coming from a variety of different players that had built things that were pretty useful in theater, that it wasn't always following the standard federal acquisition regulations. And therefore, they also had to show some flexibility in how they were going to get this capability into the users that were going to eventually bring them into theater.
you hit on another phrase there, Chris, that I think is very important, and that's thinking about and using the flexibility that's allowed. Oftentimes, at least the perception exists among companies that do business with the Defense Department that they have many flexibilities that they're allowed to use that they don't always use. What holdups in the areas that you researched and looked at in particular does that cause or does that exacerbate?
It's a really tough question. I think there's a culture that's been built up. It's perhaps at times risk adverse. It's perhaps at times a lot of it does have to do with being risk adverse and not wanting to take chances because these are very large programs at times, very large dollar values, and a lot of scrutiny that gets put onto them. But if you read a lot of those regulations closely, though, and you see the more progressive programs that exist out there. They are a little bit more flexible in how they actually execute the program, still staying within the laws.
My guest is Christopher Pernin. He's director of the Force Development Technology Program at the RAND Corporation Arroyo Center and a senior physical scientist professor at the Pardee RAND Graduate School. The third on your list of key findings as you look at rapid acquisition of Army Command and Control Systems, Chris, is a large variety of designated rapid acquisition processes have supplied wartime capabilities for DOD and the Army. And as I look into the depth of your report, what I take away is they have the ability to do this, and they know they have the ability to do this. What does that mean for the future and the decision-making process about when it's appropriate?
That's a good question. There were certainly a lot of organizations, and I'm not even sure if we captured them all. And we've done a couple different reports that have tried to capture different portions of it. And if you think about it, there's really three things we're talking about. Organizations that are going to identify that there is a need. There's going to be organizations that try to fill that need. And then there's going to be processes and organizations that try to determine, well, is this something that we need to bring into the force in a much larger way? So there's really three things to think about when you think about this whole process of bringing things into the force. One is, are you going to do it now or are you going to do it later? Because some of these rapidly acquired capabilities were things perhaps one of the services was going after later on, but now they have an opportunity to bring it in sooner, perhaps with a little bit less capability.
Please go on.
Oh, sorry. Just the second thing is, are you going to buy a little of this or are you going to buy a lot? And I think some of the perception is that when one of these services gets into a rapidly acquired IT system, is it necessary to propagate that across the entire service? Well, it's not necessarily true that you have to in all cases. It's something that you can start to dip your toes in, dip your foot in, dip your leg in, and actually determine later on whether or not you want this to be across the entire force or you want just a little bit of this right now to meet some need, and then later on go to transition to a much larger program to try to get it across the force.
When you talk about the breadth of the force, are you talking about just the Army for the purposes of this report? Are you talking about the joint environment with all of the branches?
We look across the joint environment, but for this report, we were just looking at the Army.
The fourth of your key findings, Chris, is relying on existing technology and documentation speeds acquisitions. And on first blush, I thought, well, okay, yes, of course. On second blush, I thought, well, obviously, not everybody thinks that it's as obvious as I think it is if it was necessary for you to present that. Is that something that you have found not everybody takes as obvious?
So here's it's an interesting nuance to this. Sure, the technology may have existed, and sure, we may have known about it, but in a couple of these cases, they brought it into an existing program to meet a need that was not being met in that program, and therefore, a lot of that documentation moved that program right along. So in the case of CPOF, getting into an existing program of record to meet an unbuilt need at that point, it really facilitated bringing it into the force.
The final of your findings is that command and control rapid acquisitions have ensured field support and sustainment via contractor warranties and eventual transition to an Army program of record. Explain the significance of that finding, please, Chris.
These are very difficult programs to envision very early on. So as the need was identified in, say, theater, it may not be completely clear how to sustain it over the long term. So as a service, you might go out and buy a bunch of technology or a bunch of software, a solution to this, and then have to figure out later on, well, what's it going to take to actually sustain it? And there are a variety of ways of trying to sustain it. It's something that needs to be deliberately worked out. Otherwise, you could find yourself buying a lot of equipment and a lot of things very rapidly that you don't really have a plan or the budget to sustain in the long run.
You have 8 recommendations in this report, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. I commend it to anybody who is interested in the possibilities of rapid acquisition all across DOD and across the federal government, for that matter. Are there any of these recommendations that you think, as we wrap up, that will be either particularly important above the rest, particularly difficult to implement above the rest, or otherwise noteworthy above the others?
I think probably the number one take home is that a lot of the rapid acquisition has been driven by operations. Real operational feedback. You're putting forces into the theater. You're getting some sort of operational feedback saying, hey, we need something, and then you actually fill that need. As we look forward and pull forces out of Afghanistan and perhaps have a lot less operational feedback, how do you actually decide what needs to be rapidly acquired versus what stuff should be done very deliberately and over time? I think one of the bigger questions that we're going to be left with is how much are you going to be trying to go after what COCOMs need, like right now for the 1 or 2 year fight that they're staring at, versus how much stuff do you actually invest in that's maybe 10 years or 15 years down the line that other folks within the different services are thinking about.
That's terrific insight, Chris. I appreciate you being on the program very much today. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Christopher Pernin is director of the Force Development and Technology Program at the RAND Corporation Arroyo Center, and he is a senior physical scientist and professor at the Pardee RAND Graduate School. You can read that report and hear my conversation with Chris later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.